We hope you find this WILL podcast to be valuable. A $10 voluntary credit card contribution at willpledge.org will help us continue to make podcasts of our programs available. Thank you. And that address again is willpledge.org. WILLPLEDGE.ORG. Now here's your program.
This is the Afternoon Magazine. Good afternoon. I'm Celeste Quinn. We had a musical interlude this afternoon. We suspect that there was a technical problem due to the snow. We couldn't hook up with NPR for the newscast because there's snow in the satellite dish. Anyway, we're here this afternoon.
I told you those flakes were big.
Yeah,
big, they are.
Big, big, wet
snowflakes. If anyone knows big flakes, it's Carol.
This is the Afternoon Magazine. My name is Celeste Quinn, and dog trainers Jim Keel and Carol Lindholm are with us this afternoon. They're with the Dog Training Club of Champaign-Urbana, and they join us once a month on the first Friday of the month to talk about dog behavior and dog training, caring for dogs. Listeners, if you'd like to join us this afternoon with questions, comments, 333-9455, the number in the Champaign-Urbana area. That's 333-WILL. We also have a toll-free number. That number is 800-222-9455, 800-222-WILL. And we're now taking questions by email. So if you'd like to join us by email, you can send us a message to will-talk@illinois.edu. So how are you?
I'm fine.
Looking forward to the weekend?
I am.
Good.
I understand today is National Weather Person Day. And when I heard that this morning, it occurred to me there's no National Lawyer Day. So,
and your point
what do you think?
Is,
I feel
today
left out.
Is you were supposed to wear red today for women and heart health awareness day. That's
so
the that's for the
proliferation
of red you see today.
Yes, and I put on a heart pin.
Oh, I like that. Yeah. So that's today. You know, I was driving here and I thought, what are we going to talk about today? And there's something that I don't think we have talked about yet, is the fact that the American Kennel Club is accepting mixed breeds into competition venues other than confirmation. So exciting. So very exciting. And they went one step further. The original concept was to, like our obedience trial in June, then there would be a separate class for mixed breed dogs. And then they went one step further, and it's all-inclusive. So you'll have your mixed-breed dogs or your dogs of unknown breeding and your registered dogs competing together. And it's wonderful. It's truly wonderful.
Why has it taken this long to see that happen?
You know, don't have a good answer for that. I think
the American Kennel Club started out 100 and some years ago as a dog registry organization.
Sure, AKC registered.
And in order to register your dog, the dog's parents had to be registered. So it was exclusively for what we call purebred dogs. And it still is for what we call purebred dogs for confirmation.
Okay. Which is like Westminster, which is
most of the dog shows you see on TV are confirmation shows
where you look at the dogs, you know, how it looks against the breed standard. Mm-hmm. So you have to have a breed standard and a purebred dog that conforms
to
that.
But years and years ago, they started doing obedience and having obedience trials. And over the years, as I recall, in our own club, probably in the first 30 years, we didn't have that many people with mixed breed dogs that were interested in competing with their mixed breed dog. And I remember we had a couple, and there were some venues for.
You could go, because I did that with Tracy. I went to fun matches and things like that. I could get her equivalent of a title, similar to the American Kennel Club, but it came from a different organization. I think it's the American Mixed Breed AMBOR is what it's called. I can't think of what the acronym
for it is. 10 to 20 years, probably. Other venues have sprung up, and for obedience, or what we I should say, agility, the performance end of dog showing. And I suspect, though nobody in the AKC has ever called me up for ask me anything, as a matter of fact, but I suspect the AKC sees this. That there's a market there, they can get money from people entering shows. The other venues, by the way, mostly, the United Kennel Club, I think, has always allowed mixes in. So they go way back, more than 20 years. Most, even the UKC, you still have to register your dog. In other words, if you go to the UKC and the dog gets a title, you've got to register it with the UKC before you get the title. You can't just say, well, my dog passed three times and I got a title. And also the other mix venues, clubs,
APDT,
associations.
B1.
Yeah, you still have to register the dog. But it's not for breeding purposes. It's just so the dog can be entered in the shows and can be identified. But why why the AKC is doing it? Probably just they want the money that goes along with it.
I would hate to really think that that's the sole driving factor. But Jim may be right. What's nice about it. It opens up a whole new arena for people that have wanted for years to do. You can do these things with your dogs, but. It's never very convenient, and geographically it's sometimes impossible. But this is, for those of us.
And these other venues are kind of limited. They're not as big as the AKC. On any weekend of the year, except for Christmas and New Year's, you can go to an AKC show of some kind, certainly trials.
Easily within driving distance.
Easily within driving distance.
So it's really it's very nice. And for those of us that help others achieve some success. Now, the people that come in with their wonderful puppies they've gotten from the shelter, or those of us that have a doodle, for example, now have the opportunity to compete for these titles and get the recognition. And all you get is a certificate in the mail, but, they're frameable. You put them up on the wall. That means you've accomplished something.
You and your dog.
Yes, as a team. But I just think that it's really, and it'll take a while. I think maybe our trial's in June, and we'll probably have a limited, maybe, pool of mixed breeds that attend. But then I think that in ensuing years, you'll see that population increase when the word gets out. So.
And do you think we might see more mixed breed events on television in addition?
Oh, sure. I think that will be.
Well, a lot of the non,
agility.
Agility. I'm thinking Frisbee. Most of those dogs are mixes.
Yeah, but in agility, you'll see more.
Deck divers.
You'll see more of that. But you will not see it in the confirmation ring because that is specifically for purebred dogs, because they're bred, they're measured against the standard of the breed. So that'd be this year. What did they introduce this year? Three new breeds, I think. Able to see at Westminster, which leads me to segue into this. February 15th and 16th is the Westminster Kennel Club show, and it's on USA cable station USA, beginning at 7 both nights, and it's a wonderful night. But the Humane Society has come up with a very clever fundraiser in conjunction with one of our local establishments. Can I name them?
Sure.
Houlihan's at the I Hotel.
Oh, it's already called Houlihan's. You didn't name it.
Well, I didn't want permission to name an establishment on the air.
Oh, I see.
So anyway, they are those two nights. Houlihan's is reserved for dog lovers. All the TVs will be on Westminster Dog Show. We're going to have a raffle. It's going to be a great time. So if you love dogs and you like people and you want some company and you get their beautiful plasma TVs, which I don't have, come to Houlihan's on the 15th
and that's
the
16th. A fundraiser for?
It's a fundraiser for the shelter, Champaign County Humane Society.
Okay, very good. Mm-hmm. Got to leave your dog at home, though.
Yeah, that's true, but that's okay.
Ironic, isn't it?
They don't watch it when I'm watching it anyway, so it doesn't matter.
So what are the three new breeds?
Yeah. Oh, I knew you'd ask, but one I really like, it's the red and white spaniel, Irish red and white spaniel. And what are the other two? I can't remember either. And I just read them the other day. But the Irish red and white spaniel is Irish red and white setter. I'm sorry, not spaniel, setter. So it looks kind of like a mix between an English setter and an Irish setter, but without that, they're not that elegant. You know how the Irish setters are so beautiful? It seemed to me the ones I've seen are a little more compact, not so statuesque, but we'll see. But that's one I remember because I saw one somewhere. But I can't recall the other two breeds, so I'm sorry.
Now, what does it take for a breed to be welcomed into the fold as a breed?
Jim can answer that one better, I think.
It starts with a breed club. The AKC actually is a organization of organizations. If you or I wanted to join the AKC, we couldn't. We would have to be a club. For example, our dog club is a member of the AKC. And in order to have a breed recognized, the first thing you have to have is a breed club. The breed club has to keep records of breedings and have their own little registry, mini registry.
They call it stud book.
It's called the stud book. Oh, you said that. And it's just a record of who was bred to whom and who are the parents of this dog when you go to register it. So the breed club is responsible for that, and I forgot how many generations you need. It's probably 5 or 6.
Yeah, that sounds about right.
The second thing is you have to have a written standard to submit to the AKC, a written standard describing your dog, so that if someone wanted to judge your dog against another dog against the standard, they'd have something to look at.
And that includes height, sometimes weight and size and coloring and tail and, you know.
Sometimes movement.
Ear length, movement. Yeah, it's pretty specific.
So could a group of people come together and keep records over time on the doodle?
You know, there are people that think that could happen, but I've seen some of these second and third generation crosses, and they don't look anything like the first generation cross.
Mm. In order to come up with a new breed that breeds true, that is, the offspring look
like the parents,
always, takes about 10 generations. It doesn't come about in one crossbreeding. Yeah, but could a group of people – that's how it's actually done. And, in fact, in the 1800s in England, every duke and earl had their own terrier kennel and were developing their own terrier. That's why there's so many terrier breeds. It's everybody that had a kennel developed a breed. People could. People still try to do that.
If you look at any breed, and let's use the Golden Retriever for one, if you go back to it, when that breed was first recognized, and you see the work that his name was Lord Tweedmouth, I think was his name.
Tweedmouth?
Yeah, I think that was his name that actually developed it. I didn't make it up.
It sounds like something out of Charles Dickens.
But if you see what was... he was breeding these dogs, and there was an introduction,
a
bloodhound in there, and different breeds, and then he had, I should know all this stuff, but he had two that were light colored, not the blonde you see today so much, but the light colored. Yep, flat coats in there, and oh, bingo, he liked those. So then he worked with those, but it's fascinating, really, when you see the potpourri of breeds.
One person's genetic fault is another person's breed. Robin went to Italy a couple years ago. Italy. And went to a dog show in Salzburg and went past Mozart's home. He wasn't in. But she took pictures of some goldens that were at the show, and these dogs were virtually white.
Yeah,
they weren't golden the way ours are, but they're still called golden retrievers or whatever you say in German. Tweedmouth.
Yes, okay. Tweedmouth. Okay. I did not make it up. Lord Tweedmouth.
Lord Tweedmouth. Yeah.
He was a gentleman's. Hunter or something like that, some royalty.
Well, remember the Doberman Pinscher is an artificial breed. That is, they didn't have them back in Roman times. Mr. Doberman decided he wanted a...
He was a tax collector, wasn't he?
No, I don't think so.
I think he was.
He might have been.
Thus the pincher part.
He kept them with him too, because people didn't like it when he came to collect their taxes.
He was pinching them.
Yeah, the Dobe is kind of an elegant Rottweiler, and there's a lot of Rottie. But that was about 120 years ago.
Yeah, it's a long time. A long time to evolve into what we have today.
But he set out to make a special kind of dog, and a dog that if you took one Doberman and bred it to another Doberman, you'd get a Doberman. I swear this is true. Some friends of ours had they rescued some dogs, and there was a brother and sister, and they looked virtually identical. They looked like poolies or what doodles, except they had black coats and a long curly hair like a poodle, and they weren't clipped or anything. And they had accidentally bred and had a litter. And our friends had both the parents and one of the offspring. And the offspring looked exactly like a Siberian Husky. if you took them out of the kennel and said,
"This is their child.
I just got this. Oh, you got a Siberian." And you go, "No, it's a mixed breed." But apparently behind mom and dad somewhere there was a Siberian, and apparently those genes got together. But that's the kind of thing that can happen when you start mixing dogs. You come up with things that are surprising. Sometimes you like them, like the golden – flat coats are generally black. And they come up with a white one or a very light-colored one, and they go, "Oh, I like this." And then they keep breeding it. Well, it's not a fault, but it's a genetic recessive. So you breed one recessive to the next recessive, and what, 50% will come out with the recessive characteristic. We have somebody on the line?
We do. So put your headphones.
Somebody's calling to correct us about something, I'm sure.
And dog trainers Jim Keel and Carol Lindholm are with us here today on the Afternoon Magazine. My name is Celeste Quinn. Carol and Jim join us once a month, usually on the first Friday of the month, to talk about dogs. They're with the Dog Training Club of Champaign-Urbana, and they're happy to take your questions about behavior and training, other dog questions, whatever you got in mind, 333-9455, toll-free 800-222-9455. Our first caller this afternoon is waiting for us in Wellington on line 4. Hi.
Yes, I just wanted to say that don't make fun of her about Lord Tweedmouth.
Thank you, thank you, thank you.
I never heard of the guy either. Kind of had the same reaction when I first, but I'm reading this rather interesting on one level, but very boring on another level, book called Dreadnought, which is about the lead up to kind of a naval interaction and the interactions between Queen Victoria's offspring and grandchildren and the lead up to World War One. And Lord Tweedmouth was a big wheel in the British Admiralty.
Ooh. See?
Well, Dreadnought is a guitar.
It was an unfortunate name for him, but I guess that's why I remembered it so well.
Me too. Thank you.
Well, I can say this. I'll never forget it.
Me either. So, questions, comments, further information. Here are all those things are invited this afternoon for Jim Keel and Carol Lindholm. 333-9455, toll-free 800-222-9455. So, spring classes coming up soon?
No, we're just in the middle of winter session.
Okay.
They'll be in April. We'll have spring classes in April.
But it might be a good time to sign up.
Oh, yeah, because we fill up so fast. And especially now. Well, you know, the winter classes, it's always intrigued me because you've got your weather issues to deal with. But they're always well attended, and they always do extremely well, despite the fact they can't go outside and do anything. But they don't have, there's no real competition for people with children. Then you have all those, football or soccer or baseball or whatever they do, and those are less.
It's still hard to, you know, I have Malamutes, and I hate to go outside and train.
Yeah.
It's cold, but I'm teaching a puppy elementary class, which I've never taught before. And boy, my class is just great.
My class is better than yours, and it's great.
Yeah. And my class is a lot quieter than yours.
Yeah. Is it noisy? I don't think it's noisy. He's there the same night I am. On Monday nights.
Next ring over.
So the puppies are quiet?
It's me, I think, that's so noisy.
They're not only quiet, but the people that you can tell, you know, are working with them during the week.
When you do things in the winter, you have to structure the class so they have things they can do inside the home.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, who's going to go out walking for a couple blocks doing controlled walking when you can't even see a foot in front of your face? So
no one, that's who.
No one. So, so you want people to try to do things and to be successful so they'll continue. So it requires a little bit of creativity or thinking outside the box for the instructor and the assistants to think of things to do. I know when I have these treats that the dogs go crazy over, and it's just this roll of, and it's, I don't even want to read the ingredients, but they like it. So what I do with
roll
my
over?
Own, it's not roll over, but that kind
something
of thing.
Something like that.
So when I come home, I always have some left over in my pocket, and I've been doing this for quite some time, and mine know it. So I come home, this is really great in the wintertime. So I put them outside, and then I go around and hide these pieces of food. I'll put some on the couch, some on the coffee table, chairs, where they can reach it, you know,
toilet.
Because you want them to know.
No?
Because you want them to succeed, but I hide these all over. Well, now, you know, they love this game. And then I let them in the door, and I just tell them to go find it, and they just race through the house, and I have to go back and make sure. I have to remember where I put these things, because wouldn't want one of these things to rot inside the house. But they race through the whole middle level looking for these things. And it's great exercise for them, too.
Yeah.
It's very stimulating. They love doing it. So
yeah.
So those little tricks and tips in the wintertime are good.
We have an email question. My wife and I adopted two puppies 1 year ago. We're doing some obedience training. Is it feasible to work with them both at the same time, or would it be better to separate them and work with them individually? Thanks for doing this entertaining and enjoyable show.
That was Ben Lord Tweedmouth.
Yeah, well, it could have been. I gave this lecture to my class last time. If I were they doing the work, there's nothing wrong with training both dogs at the same time. I mean, in terms of the training. But if they got these two puppies at the same time, they should separate them and treat each one individually for at least a while every week. And the reason is, sadly, dogs can become so dependent on each other that if, you know, for any reason one happens to go somewhere, the other dog can be very despondent. And I think in human terms, we would say very sad. And we had that happen. We had mother and son. We bred mom and got this son, and he was a very nice dog, so we kept him together, and we kept them kenneled together. And then one day mom died, and poor Paul was just, you know, where is she? And he wouldn't take no for an answer for a long time. He missed her a lot. That's a sadder part, but even if a dog has to go to the vets overnight or something like that, if the dogs are so dependent, the other dog can become very anxious and make itself sick. So if you have two puppies, there's nothing wrong with training them in terms of training. That's fine. But if I would train them separately because it's a good time to give each one individual attention. There's a certain amount of distraction that you don't want to have when you're starting to teach something.
Mm-hmm.
You want the dog focused on you. And then later when they know it, then you want more distractions so you can train them to ignore distractions. So I would start training them separately, later on put them together. But in terms of training, there's really no difference in having them together.
I had two shepherd puppies, but they're 8, 9 months old in the same class. Oh, that was horrible. They couldn't bear to be more than a few feet from one another. And shepherds are very vocal. And, you know, and it was male, female, and if one was across the ring and the other was on the other side, all they'd do was cry and vocalize, and they wanted to be close. And they literally spent 24/7 together. So even that few feet, it posed a huge barrier for the people that were working them to try to get anything accomplished. Yeah. They couldn't bear it. The dogs couldn't.
And with these folks, you know, right at home, you can just train, take one outside and train it, and then take the other one outside and train it. It's not like you have to separate them by miles or anything.
Yeah, it's harder to do when if you have two dogs. Now, see, everything's perception. So I'm listening to you read the email, and I had a feeling it's a couple that are working together to train the dogs. Maybe so, and that'd be great. But if it's only one of the couple that's training the dogs, and you can only really do one at a time, and the other one needs to be kenneled or occupied elsewhere, because you'll never get it done. You'll never be able to spend the time you want with the first one that you're working with.
Well, I think I talked about this. If Robin and I are training, if we're in the same class, it just doesn't work. Robin's a much better trainer than I am. I mean, she talks to her dogs all the time, and I hardly ever say anything. And so my dog is always trying to get to her. You're a big jerk. I'm going to her. The other thing is, the same thing applies when we were sledding. Robin talks to her team the whole time.
Why didn't you ever, pick up on this?
Because my guys are doing fine.
They're
floating. We're floating along.
This is more, and I don't want to generalize, but men have a harder time doing these very things, talking and encouraging your dog, and not worrying about what other people are thinking or saying.
I do, but I don't do it constantly, and Robin does it constantly.
No,
and
she does
when
not
we used
do
to go
constantly.
Out together, my team would listen to her, and so we'd get into arguments about whether you should reward them when they're doing fine, or talk to them the whole time, and all these kind of general arguments. And then one day we went out on our own separate paths, and it was wonderful. I didn't talk to my team the whole time. She yacked at them the whole time, and neither one of us cared because we weren't within miles of each other.
Wow, what a solution that is.
Well, my point being that if it's mom and dad training these dogs, they might want to separate. Even so.
Yeah. It's interesting, though, talking to animals. I think it's, I don't know if anyone has studied this, but I find it really fascinating because my husband and I adopted a cat 5 years ago and we brought him home.
Has it been 5 years already? Mm-hmm. Oh, my.
He's 10 years old this month. And when we brought him home, he was 5 years old and he had been at the shelter for a while. I don't think of a long time, but he'd been there for a while. And he was a little shy. I mean, he was affectionate right off the bat, but he couldn't hardly speak. I mean, he'd open his mouth and to meow, and there was nothing. And now, because we've talked to him, and I think we actually talk with him. That might sound a little goofy to some people, but yeah, he's got a lot to say now. You know,
I chat with mine all the time. I love talking to my dogs.
Sure. That's what I tell my classes. I talk to my dogs constantly. I ask for their advice often.
Yeah, well, that's how you that's how they know your mood and what you want from them, correct?
You're not necessarily training them, however.
No.
Except to listen to your voice.
This morning, it's not quite snow and it's not rain. I think it might be ice, so let's be careful when we go out the door. I catch myself, they don't really get what I'm saying, but they like it. I mean, how horrible. We all know what it's like to be when somebody's not talking to you for some reason.
Oh, shut up.
You know what I mean, though? It's horrible. Yeah. So I just chat with them.
You have to. I was thinking about this the other day. I saw something on PBS, I think, a Buddhist temple in Japan that had the temple in the middle, and then it had the grounds around it, and they have reindeer. And Japanese people in Japan bow to each other. They don't shake hands the way we do. Well, all these deer would – and there was food provided. You'd give them some corn or something. And these deer would walk up to people and bow their heads.
How cool is that?
And well, and the reason is the Japanese viewed this as a human kind of thing and would, of course, reward them and go, oh, hello, and here's some corn. So the deer all go up and bow. If they were in the – and I've been at deer parks in the U.S. when I was a kid, and none of the deer bow because we don't recognize that as a greeting. Whereas, well, my dog, Kurt, dogs will tend to give a paw. You really don't have to train them to do it. But if you do train them to do it, you reward him. Now, Kurt, I mean, it's the only thing he knows.
Oh, yeah.
And it's boom, boom. Kurt, please don't hit me with your paw. Bam, bam. But we recognize that because it's a shake hands kind of thing, and that's what we do. So now I've created a monster with Kurt wanting to shake hands.
I used to teach that in class, to have the dog paw your hand, and then you'd open it, and there'd be a treat in there, but the dog had to figure out to put his paw on your hand.
Mm-hmm.
And it just, you have to really know your dog.
We used to play this game, I think, where we would put a treat in one hand and not the other. Mm-hmm. And the dog would have to – you'd show it and then, and then – I can't remember how we did this. And maybe we – it was kind of like a
– Well, you can take those little plastic or paper cups and put a treat under, put three of them, put treat in the middle one and let them find it. And there's a million things. I like that story about the reindeer, though.
Well, the point of it is that the reindeer weren't saying hello any more than the dog is saying hello.
No.
It's just we see in them things that we do, and we reward it somehow.
And it works for the deer.
And the deer get corn, and the dog gets treats. But the dog has also learned that when we're talking, if they look at us and maybe cock their head a little bit, it looks to us like they're paying attention to what we say when they're actually sitting there going, okay, where's my cookie, you big idiot? Shut up, give me a cookie. Right?
I had a cute cartoon somebody sent to me today, and I can't remember. It was two dogs sitting there, and they're looking up, and they said, why is she talking like that to us? I hate baby talk. And the other one said, because she thinks we like it. It was kind of cute.
This is the Afternoon Magazine. Dog trainers Jim Keel and Carol Lindholm of the Dog Training Club of Champaign-Urbana are with us this afternoon. My name is Celeste Quinn. Listeners, you can join us with a telephone call this afternoon, 333-9455, the number in the Champaign-Urbana area. Toll-free, 800-222-9455. Or you can join us with an email message, will-talk@illinois.edu. I want to go back to the idea of when we're talking about dogs that are raised together, and if one is taken away, the other can be quite sad, or maybe they're both sad at that separation. It seems to me that I've seen one other occasion where a dog seemed really, really down, and I think it was the first dog in the household, and the couple gets married, and a baby comes along the way, and another dog comes along, and this little guy was, for a while, he was just really blue.
He felt pushed to the side, perhaps.
Yeah, maybe.
Yeah, those things happen.
He did come around, though, but for a while.
They, change.
I'm still mad when my baby brothers came along.
You're still mad about it?
Yeah, what is this? Hey.
I was here first.
Exactly. I was here first. You used to pay attention to me. Now they can't even walk. What are you doing?
Dogs are real sensitive to change, as most animals are. And some totally embrace having something new and different in their lives. Others just don't roll with it as easily as others. I always think it's kind of sad, actually, when, with the people that foster litters of puppies, like the coonhounds. The red-bone coonhounds that we had a couple months ago, and
how do you know what color their bones are?
Stop. There were four of them, and they came in with that horrible Demodex mange, but they were together all the time, and they were five months old or so, I think, perhaps a bit older, when they were all adopted out to different homes. And I, you know, it kind of reminds me of like when Bambi's, when his mother's is killed. I'm thinking, oh, these poor, you know, but you go through this when the puppies have to, they go off to their own lives and then they may never see their siblings again. And that's, what's that word, anthropomorphizing?
Anthropomorphize. Mm-hmm.
But sometimes you just can't help yourself from feeling that way. You know, they, if you look at a litter of kittens or a little puppies, I know they sleep together for survival's sake, but there's also got to be some affection in there as well. And then, boom, off they go.
It's much truer of foxes than it is of wolves, and it's much truer of wolves than it is of dogs. But at least in foxes, there's a mechanism. When they hit a certain age, and it's only a few months, maybe 2 months, they hate each other. And that's how they disperse.
Mm-hmm.
Up till then, they're playing like cubs, and then they hit this age, and they go, eh, I hate you, and then they start fighting, and then they just leave. And I think naturally there are mechanisms, because it's true what you're saying about dogs, but it's true of all dogs. Sooner or later, they all leave their mother, they all leave their friends and neighbors and go to live with some strange creatures.
And make a new family.
And they seem to do it fine,
mm-hmm.
For the most part.
Mm-hmm. But sometimes it just strikes me that it just seems kind of, you know, sad. But you can't, if Jim and Robin kept all the puppies that they've ever had, because they couldn't bear to split up those little families, they'd be in the newspaper. They'd be on the front page. So you can't do it. But
yeah, it is bad. We kept three puppies out of a litter once, and sadly, they all died within a few months of each other, because they, as they got old and they hit the end of their life. But, you know, bang, 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 three dogs are dead in about 6 months. So we stopped doing that.
Not to say people can't have two puppies from the same litter and everything's perfectly fine, but that's just the natural order of things.
It's some dogs, it's not a problem, but it is really a training issue. And if you have a couple dogs or cats and dogs or whatever, occasionally, if you're going someplace, take one with and don't take the other.
Mm-hmm. That is very true.
And if, you know, you'll only be gone an hour, the dog won't fall apart, but they'll get used to the fact that there are times when they'll be alone.
This is the Afternoon Magazine. Dog trainers Carol Lindholm and Jim Kuehl of the Dog Training Club of Champaign-Urbana are with us this afternoon. My name is Celeste Quinn. Listeners, you can join us with a telephone call or an email message. will-talk@illinois.edu is the email address. 333-9455, the number in the Champaign-Urbana area. Toll-free 800-222-9455. Let's take a call from a listener in Champaign on line one. Hi.
Hello?
Hi there.
Hi. I have a question. I have two female golden retrievers. They're sisters, litter pets, the same. And when I go home to spend time at my mother's house, they will not eat. I was over there just over the holidays, 10 days, they would not eat. I came home, the first thing they did when they walked in was eat. And the other question I have is, why does one sit on the other one?
Because she can.
Well, when you say, did you take the dogs with you, or had you left them at home with somebody to take care of them?
Oh, no, they're with me all the time. I spoiled them terribly.
Okay, so you went and on a visit for 10 days, but during the whole time they wouldn't eat.
No, they would not. And as soon as I brought them home, walked in the door, they both ate.
Well, they were starving.
Yeah. That's odd. I haven't heard that. I've heard of dogs not eating when somebody goes away and they're at home.
To decrease their food. Well, I do that, and I exercise them all the time. They don't lose weight. They just get bigger, they look like.
Where you live here in Champaign, where were you visiting?
My mother's over by north of Danville.
Okay. It's not that far. I was going to say people don't realize that changes in water can really affect a dog. It affects us, but it can really affect a dog. And when we go...
Oh, she has well water. I wonder if that was it.
Well, that's the only thing I can think of. We have well water, too, because we live outside town. So we will take gallons of water if we're going to be gone a long time, and we'll mix that water with whatever water is available wherever we're going so that it's not such a big shock to the dog's system.
Oh, okay.
But you can get, you know, loose stools and things like that from a sudden change in water. That really wouldn't explain, I don't think, 10 days of not eating.
They must have lost a lot of weight in 10 days.
No, they didn't. They look pretty good.
Does your mother have, like, chickens hiding
nothing.
Nothing?
No.
Are there any rabbits in the yard or anything? In other words, we had a dog that once...
Another food source?
Another food source. That's what I'm thinking.
She has a huge home, and they got to sit around the fireplace. I think they had too much to do sometimes.
That would tend to make them hungrier.
Too busy.
Did you change their diet in any way?
No. Same thing for 2 years.
Maybe they don't like being gone at Christmas.
They missed the tree or something.
Yeah. Try it in the springtime or summer and see what happens for a day or two.
And why would the one sit on the other?
When you say sit on, is one lying down or are they just crossing
and
legs?
The other one just sits on her when she lies down.
It's just fun. The one lying down doesn't seem to mind, does she?
No. But she's kind of my favorite, and I always kind of think the other one is doing that to make me mad.
No.
It's probably just something they learned to do. It's kind of an affectionate thing between the two of them.
I bet you laughed the first time you saw it, didn't you?
Yeah, I did. I thought, whoa, what are you doing?
But yeah,
they've been together, kennel mates, everything. I mean, they have never been separated. So I wonder, you were talking about that. I wonder if I'll ever have trouble if one does get sick or something.
How old are they?
They're 23 months.
Plenty of time.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, just if you're going to the store or something, especially in the winter, this is a good time because it's not hot. You can go to the store if you're only going to be in a few minutes. Take a dog with, run in the store, run back, and you're only gone a half an hour. And the other dog learns a couple things. One, it can handle itself on its own, and you'll always come back, and her playmate will always come back.
Oh, okay. Well, thank you.
You're welcome. Let's take another call. A listener in Hayworth on line two. Hi.
Hi. I live in the Hayworth area, in a rural area. Across a driveway from a family, a young family, that acquired a puppy, something of the German Shepherd variety, I believe, last summer, about 9 months ago. And the puppy now rapidly becoming a dog runs, they let it out of the house and it runs free for periods of time. They kind of watch it from the window, but it menaces me. And I have, and as it grows bigger and fiercer, it hasn't bitten me yet, but it's come close and it just is really a real frustration to me. I love the young children in the house, and they're out playing with it. And I would love to make friends with this puppy because I do admire and respect and love dogs and would love to kind of share something about the puppy with this lovely family. But what should I do to save my skin?
A lot of times dogs appear to be aggressive and they're really not. But if you're feeling a threat, you know, you're probably right. What I would do is ask if you could come over at dinner time for the dog and feed it. In other words, they can put the food together, but this is assuming they don't free feed, of course. And you could give the dog the food. The dog will learn a couple things. One, you're accepted in that household. Two, you're the source of food. Three, you're not a threat.
I could eat it myself. I mean, if I could ask them if I could put some food out myself for it.
Well, just putting the food out isn't. I mean, the dog has to associate
with
you.
With me being there outside.
Yeah.
Oh wait, does it eat outside?
I think it eats in their house. I'm not sure. They have a back porch area.
Oh. Well, Jim's kind of, he's going there, but he wants you to be inside their home and actually put the dog's bowl down with the food in it.
Okay.
The other thing you can do if you can't do that is I always carry cookies on me, dog
always,
cookies.
Always, yeah.
And when the dog comes up to you, throw him a cookie.
Okay.
And
make sure you let the people know that you're going to be doing this, though.
Yeah.
That you're going to carry, you know, some milk bones in your pocket crumbled
okay.
up, and you're going to toss him some cookies, but make sure that they know and that, that's okay with them.
Oh, certainly.
Yeah. Yeah. But I would do that. That would be the easiest thing of all, rather than even why bother going into their house and
feeding. Well, the reason I say going in the house is if she, if it is a guard dog type dog.
Mm-hmm. It is.
Then you being accepted in the home is kind of important to it.
Mm-hmm.
And you can make friends with a dog by giving it food, but you know, if it's a guard dog, I'm thinking of a friend of ours that we were supposed to watch his Doberman while he was out of town, and we knew the dog for years. We went over to open the door, and he was there growling at us. Wow. And you know us, Eric. You know us. We're not bad.
Right.
So even though the dog may know you and may be friendly with you, once you try to go in the house, their job is to keep you out. So she would be accepted in the house, and the dog would understand that. That's all I'm saying.
Okay. So I knock on the door. I mean, I'll arrange this with him on the phone and ask them if I may come in and feed their dog, and the dog won't attack me when I come in to feed it.
No, you know, he's a 9-month-old puppy or 10 months old or
something. I can't exactly remember when it was acquired. It's certainly it's been winter time, so I haven't seen it's been inside and I've been inside.
Mm-hmm.
But yesterday the children were out with the dog, as cold as it is now, just needing, you know, to cabin fever, and we were all kind of outside a minute, and the dog I had noticed had really grown, and it was not the puppy that I knew a few months ago, and it was really, really menacing me.
It sounds like it was watching the kids.
Mm-hmm.
And I think run with Carol and Jim's suggestions and see how that works out for you.
I will do that. Thank you very much.
Take care.